La Baie des Anges, the store on the shores of the Milky Way. Crushed on the edge of San Francisco Bay, I hadn't yet seen Jacques Demy's 1963 film Bay of Angels, nor developed my passion for gambling. I was a penniless college student whose only risks threatened her dignity. Unlike Demy's existential bank teller or his Madame Bovary-like housewife gambler, I had no family, job, or husband to leave behind. One man taught me to eat bagels, cream cheese, and lox on a Sunday morning after sex. Another romanced me at the laundromat. The one I loved read Garcia Lorca to soigner professors' daughters living in the Berkeley Hills. And a Dutchman, all angles, Noirish cheekbones, and smoking Gauloise Bleu, brought out the old snob in me. As we talked naked in bed, he revealed he was flunking out of university. I've forgotten his name and only remember the Dutchman's cheeks, smooth as ice cream that night, and longing I could have fulfilled by returning to his bed had I not been such a snob. So many lovers for this girl with long black stockings and Alice in Wonderland hair. I had a mystery face that held secrets like tapestries, damasked and textured over opal skin. I thought of myself then as a knight questing for love, the pure love Percival felt for the Grail. Yet it was only sex that became my adventure, and thus no sex ever really satisfied me, left me always wanting meaning, waiting for more. I might see the Grail hovering, shimmering over each man, tattooed or leathered or wearing motorcycle boots, but never could I hold the cup in my hand or drink from it, just as never once have I gambled and been ready to lay down the cards, leave a casino, never ready to leave any lover. When I first watched Demy's film long past those Berkeley days, it mesmerized me. In it, the blonde woman played Jean Moreau by Jean Moreau followed only her obsession. In Bay of Angels, both bank teller and housewife know that gambling is about hope, which must be infinite, no conclusion possible. The Grail, the cup, always held out. Floating in trance or dream, never grasped, we can never reach the edge of our ever-expanding universe. This concept our cosmologists have recently authenticated and explains why the sky is dark at night. The edge can never be reached, but we rest small on the banks of the Milky Way with a testimony from Demy's film. You can leave your daily life, your connections to others. Your job if you are a bank teller, or your husband if you are a wife. You may toss and toss the dice for lighted nights, though each loss will not be an ending. Losing makes you hope the more that you might win, and winning is like orgasm satiating you. No, satiating you briefly. There can be no edge, no ending. No, happily ever after, because once you win, you feel the illusion of finality. And if there were no night, you might win and win and forever win. But without loss, there'd be no dark, the night sky to contrast with day. How would the rush of light come crushing in? How would there be hope if there were no change? None of that matters, because we don't have to understand the physics of the cosmos in order to experience them. Living as if watching movies, reading poetry, studying Stephen Hawking could illuminate questions about time and space. Do you think you would better experience a grail as impossible as the black and white kiss, the angel-winged lips of housewife and banker touching at the end of the film? Would it allow you better to comprehend aging, or why you aren't any longer the girl with the wandering poetry hair? the one who wore stockings of noir 50 years ago in her Berkeley Beatnik Cafe. The last two poems I'm going to read, I'm wondering about what's happening to this. These last two poems are both about gambling. This next poem is called Zimborska's Cigarette. And the title comes from a wonderful photograph I saw of the Polish Nobel laureate, Wisława Zimborska, sitting in a cafe with a cigarette in her hand and smoke drifting around her head. And on her face was the most wonderful smile. In fact, it was a grin. It wasn't a smile. And I thought, oh, this is how I've felt a few times in my life. And so this is a short catalog poem in which I list a few of those times when I felt Zimborska's smile. One of them was one of the few times, you will find out that I really am the most petty of petty gamblers. I probably only go to a casino not more than six times a year. I play blackjack at the dollar table, if there is one. I play slot machines, but not for very much money. And I just really love to play Texas Hold'em poker, but I'm not one of the all-in, I don't play limit poker, unlimited poker. I play 2-4 Texas Hold'em limit. But this is about one night when I just threw and threw the dice. Zimborska's Cigarette. When silver bangles clashed on my young arm as my sturdy harpsichord-playing fingers were shooting that one winning craps game, I was, for a moment, the woman on film. What a pale girl I had been, smoking Russian cigarettes, playing solitaire, always watching the high school Jimmy Deans, whose eyes were silver bullets. Once I was caught in the black and silver of a motorcycle jacket, and once I was caught grinning in an artist's cafe, masked in smoke against discovery. Yet so few moments of extraordinary beauty remembered from a long life. The bracelets singing thinly in Las Vegas as I threw and threw the dice, making everyone at the table rich. Sitting alone in the Berkeley Cafe, creating a moonlit bookery out of espresso and celluloid longings. Walking among spring plums blossoming in San Antonio, and realizing the flowering trees smelled like tortillas. Being photographed in New York by a camera that saw me as Polish amber, soft resin of trees, wings of dragonflies, lacy memories cling to my hair, embedded like cigarette smoke from the invisible man, King of Spain, who has this lifetime loved me. I invented him that one night out of dice and green baize, out of the slinky winning touch gliding up my arm and down almost over my wrist, a lifetime's arc of silver bangles. My last poem is a new poem written since this book was published. It's called Poker Games. And I use tropes that I often use in my poems of birds and especially flowers. The flowers in this that dominate this poem are those beautiful Datura moonflowers that Georgia O'Keeffe painted. If you haven't seen them in reality, we grow them. Robert grows them in our garden, and he even photographs them. The epigraph to this poem is taken from Dante with a little moderation of my own. Abandon hope, all ye women who enter here. I guess this is my dancing on a grave of a son of a bitch poem for this generation, because I sit at mostly all male tables, and because I don't play in fashionable places, I play in local casinos, I play with old guys who never have even heard of feminism. Poker games. At the table, my face has the soft inquiry of a snowy owl. I sit composed into myself at a 2-4 limit Texas Hold'em game every afternoon on my vacation with the locals, the regulars, who don't accept me, sometimes barely tolerating me as I myopically stare round-eyed through my big French glasses at the flop, hunkering down into my chair like a small desert burrowing owl. My posture, my demeanor, unable to disguise an outsider self, the corduroy jacket, odd-shaped amber chunks around my neck, my face without any makeup, as all women are supposed to wear, opening and closing with I call or I raise, as responsive to pairs, trips, full houses as to the diurnal light, that moonflowers which I saw from the car sprawling along desert roadsides when we were speeding towards Las Vegas, stretched and turned their trumpet lady faces. My fellow players, usually old men, World War II or Korean War veterans, retirees, young business guys, gardeners, managers of big boy food cafes or fast food chains, sometimes old women too, but they are ragged and tough as crows sitting by the roadside. Despite makeup and glitter, they pretend they are men, and they avoid me more than the men, who are mostly polite to me, though obviously thinking I must be either crazy or just a bad player to bet so many hands. They are all shoe leather from living in the desert, their hands sometimes like bird claws, in front of them their chips often stacked tall as Joshua trees, or long and winding as the Great Wall of China, sometimes in counting house rows, each player proud of some ritual stacking that marks his territory by its height or architecture. They are always surprised when I, who bet on almost every hand, losing chips as if I were an autumn locust tree shedding its coin-like leaves, or a moonflower who folds into a white deflated parachute after its day-long life, actually win a hand. But poker is still a preserve of male sanctity, and women are not welcome unless they prove they're better than men. No room for equality here. Their disdain for me, obvious as I play and lose. Buy more chips, play and lose. Buy more chips, my ritual, spending, while theirs is stacking. That's probably why I like this world, my secret Annie Oakley self wanting praise, acceptance from my father, the boys, those unyielding rejectors. A dealer once said I reminded him of the female actor Linda Hunt, who plays the boss in NCIS LA. And despite, notably, she's almost a little person, who can tell I am not when I'm sitting behind a poker table? Even though I realize it was another male gesture of diminution, I liked the fact he thought I seemed in charge. And I liked, and I tried to remember to keep Linda's wry, closed mouth smirk on my face when he looked at me, my poker face. In truth, with the solemn, ruffled stillness of owls, closed whiteness of moonflowers, responding to blackening moods at the table. I finally get a good hand, and an even better flop to go with it. As bulky as a shy horse, skittering, exciting, almost frightened like a bird trapped in a room, I try to smooth my poker face, steady my hands, my voice, not blurt, though I almost blurted out, I raise, because those desert buzzards think I am fresh kill, knowing I bet too much, believe I have nothing, because I always have nothing. They raise, and raise, and raise, and I re-raise and re-raise again and again. Finally, those tall stacks of Joshua trees are in the pot, the entire wall of China thrown in, the counting house tidy rows also, and they call me. I show my winning hand. A smile opens the stall of my skittering horse. My smile rushes out like the ocean. The snowy owl, no longer trapped, floats away on her giant wingspan. And my smile is a trumpet of white joy like a moonflower. I am almost in tears. An ocean of endorphins rolls clear through my arms as I stretch them out to gather in my chips. All those chips, everybody's chips. I am no longer just tourist Diane who bets too many hands, the bad player to be stained. I am, yes, I am a winner. You can, instead of tourist Diane, now call me this name, Moonflower Ocean. I am Moonflower Ocean. I am a flood of trumpeting blossom, open and rushing with joy. I am a rampart of joy, a rampart which I am building into my own immense wall of chips. Good old poker boys, I for a moment captured your mayo preserve, taken all your chips, built my walled lady flower space with them. I am good enough to play. In front of me now, all your chips have become mine. Moonflowers, snowy owls, a room of my own. No, an immense wall of my own.